to live righteously. Hey, it's me, Richie T, and it's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. It's episode number 158. In the second and third block, we have our friend from Holy Fetch come back on, and we talk more about Mormon myths and about what people are searching for about Mormons on the internet. That's the second and the third block, so stick around for that. Yeah, that's right. Today, we're going to have the definitive answer as to whether or not Cain is Bigfoot. That's coming. Right now, a few emails, though. Wanted to share these. Excuse me. Whew. Wanted to share these emails. This is from Dr. Paul White. It says, "Hello, Richie. Well, I will miss Brittany. I was very impressed with her blog posts about her faith journey. I welcome the newest voice on the podcast of a show." Thank you for phrasing that correctly, Dr. Paul. Based on some of her, quote, reporting, how about the name of Sister Rumor or Miss I Heard Somewhere? Thanks for saving me a seat, Paul. So a couple of suggestions for Janae's nickname. This one, I listened to the articles of news for episode January 19th, and all I can say is, oh my gosh, that was fantastic. This is from Robert Casey. But seriously, he says, I did enjoy it, and I want to wish a warm welcome to the newest host, Janae. I hope I spelled that correctly. You didn't. I will miss having Brittany in the hall and wish her much happiness on whatever path she finds. Keep up the great work, Robert. So thank you for sending that, Robert. I've got this one. This one, Melanie. She says, I have a funny story about going to a honeymoon hotel in Utah. This is in reference to this last articles of news on the 27th. We talked about why people would go to a honeymoon hotel, like an anniversary hotel, or like everyone goes there for their first night of being married. She says, Melanie says, in the summer of 2008, I went to visit my family in Utah with my three kids all by myself. A couple of days before we were to head home, my husband surprised me by telling me that he would be flying in the next day to join us. He said, why don't we get your mom to babysit and we'll have a date night and stay the night at a hotel there. I, of course, agreed and began looking for a room after we hung up. Well, not only was the next day a Friday night in the summer in Utah, but it was 888. So you can imagine my choices. All I could find was one room at a podunk one-star motel on our way, or a $350 night at a mansion in Salt Lake City. It was the August room, ironically. What the heck, I thought. We almost never get a night away together. The next day, my husband came. We had our super fun date at Thanksgiving Point, and we went to the hotel. Three highlights of staying at a honeymoon hotel. Number one, there was a sign on the bed that said there was a $50 cleaning fee for the ornate bedspread. I pulled the beautiful comforter off the bed as to not incur said cleaning fee and froze all night. The next day, I made sure to tell the hotel manager my husband and I had not used the bedspread, and she smiled. Sagely, she told me we were supposed to sleep under the bedspread. The cleaning fee is for couples who make messes on the bedspread. She then followed up by telling me that very, very frequently large messes are made on the bed on that bedspread. Ew. After checking in, this is number two. After checking in, my husband went down to the lobby to buy a couple of sodas. He only had a 20, and the hotel wasn't making change. He was really thirsty, so he bought $20 worth of sodas. While he was in the process of buying the sodas, three different couples came to check in, all still in full Mormon wedding attire. The last couple, who looked like they were barely old enough to drive, let alone get married, stared wide-eyed at my husband's 10 sodas. Trying to ease the tension, Joe said the bride looked petrified. Joe cracked, "Don't worry. After you're done, you'll need 10 sodas, too." Instead of laughing, the groom turned bright red, and the bride buried her face in her hands like she was about to cry, and my very ashamed and mortified husband fled back upstairs with our 10 sodas. And then number three, the next morning we bounded downstairs to the dining room for breakfast. Having been married for 6 years, my husband and I laughed and joked and talked. It dawned on us within a few minutes that though we were surrounded by like 15 other couples, the room was dead silent. Not a word. The total silence was oppressive. At first, the realization that we were surrounded by 30 totally silent people who had all just had sex with each other for the first time and were now sitting at their tables completely struck dumb with awkwardness and none of them even looking at each other at all was kind of funny. But as the noiseless minutes ticked by, it began to be more and more uncomfortable. Anything we said to each other sounded deafening in that hushed atmosphere. Being me, this made me titter uncontrollably, but it was the top five, but it was definitely in the top five most awkward experiences of my life. Finally, we were done with breakfast and we fled. We still laugh and laugh remembering it, but I am completely in agreement with what you say that I will never stay at a honeymoon hotel again. Ha ha. All right, so there's that email. And then finally this. It's been a long time since we've heard from Kevin, so here we go. This one from Kevin. Hey, Richie. I heard your articles of news where you discussed the show My Husband Is Not Gay. You also said that homosexuality isn't a choice. I'm not going to get into the fact it is a choice or not, but here is what I will say. Perhaps there are people born with same-sex attractions. However, for centuries, God has expected people to overcome these same-sex attractions. I know of people who have very feminine characteristics. If Heavenly Father didn't think people could overcome same-sex attraction, then he wouldn't have said gay marriage. Then he would have said gay marriage is acceptable. It seems to me that God has put us on this earth to overcome weaknesses that we have. I also think God expects me to overcome issues with my blindness. I also wonder, in today's world, how many people don't have same-sex attraction issues, but it is in their head. For example, if a male was into arts and entertainment at a young age and the father said to the kid, "You shouldn't be into that because it isn't manly," but the kid is still interested, then as he gets older, he finds that his male friends that are into arts and entertainment are gay. Therefore, he thinks he's gay. I know you said not every homosexual is born with same-sex attraction. However, I wonder if there is a lot of it in people's heads more in people's heads than we might think. Furthermore, the last time I checked, BYU has a program to help people overcome homosexual behavior. That is a firm indication that our Father in Heaven doesn't condone this lifestyle, with no exceptions. I do not know what will happen to homosexuals after this life. That is up to God to decide. I do know that the Lord expects us to overcome this desire if we are born with it, just like He wants us to overcome our lustful desire with the opposite sex if we are not married to that person. This doesn't mean the thoughts will go away, but He does want us to control the desire when these thoughts come to our mind. Second, I really think you should interview the people who made the breath mints. I love them. I've even showed them to people who I know personally. By the way, I like just Joni's joke. The breath mints would be a breath of fresh air when you read that if the church discussed political matters over the pulpit at General Conference. It would be a breath of fresh air. So that email right there from Kevin. I'm just gonna share that, and I'm gonna let all of you respond to that. Coming back in the second and third block of the Cultural Hall, it's Mormon Myths with the guy from Holy Fetch.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
It's time for the second block of the Cultural Hall, and you know the Desert Star Theater, that's where we're recording this. It's not 4920 South State Street. It is 4861 South State Street. If you give people the address 4920, they'll sit in a Wells Fargo parking lot. And for that, Casey Cummings, I am apologetic. Thanks for being here, man.
No problem.
You guys will remember, you lifers or lifers with Pioneer Stock will remember when we had Casey on before. He's from HolyFetch.com, which I still think is probably the best name of the Cultural Hall, sure. I'm a little biased, a little impartial to that, but a close second, or we can give it first of anything else. HolyFetch.com has got to be just awesome.
Yeah, it worked out well that I was able to get that domain, because when I came up with that idea, I was really excited for it, and I was just hoping, like, please don't be gone, and when it was there, I snatched it up pretty quickly.
Holy Fetch, please don't be gone. And it's not Holy Fetch. If you listen, do you remember what number episode you were back in the day? I can look it up while we're talking, and I'll give people a number if they want to go back and listen to it. Because I'm assuming we'll make some references to some of that. It's a website. to me, it's just somewhere, the way I look at it, is a website that I can waste hours of time. But why don't you give people kind of a better idea of what it is?
When I explain it, I always just say it's Snopes, but for Mormons. So if you're not familiar with Snopes, that's the urban legend website. So this is basically just all urban legends, but for the Mormon culture. So it has to have some sort of Mormon tie to the urban legend. And then I kind of research them and then put on there whether I think at least it's true or false, or some of them are kind of in between. So
now, I remember when we talked before, you had talked about how it was just a considerable amount of time. Do you still find it to be taking a bunch of your time, or is it starting to get to a point where it's manageable and you've researched into stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it's manageable, and I mean, if you look and see, it's not like I'm updating it daily or anything. You know, I just update it when something comes up and I actually look into it. So it's not something that's taking up all my time. The one thing I do like to note is that it's really for entertainment purposes only, because I get a lot of people that complain about not enough research has been done into this myth or anything like that.
There are not cited sources.
Right, yeah. And for that, I'm just saying, look, really, it's exactly what you said. It's a website to go to that's entertaining, and you can spend a few hours looking up some stuff, maybe finding some legends that you'd never heard of. Mm-hmm. Whether those really are true or not, you know, I usually leave it up to the viewer to decide. So,
yeah, it's and in some ways, some of these urban myths kind of make it Onion-esque. If people are familiar with The Onion, like, it almost seems so satirical. Maybe farcical is a better way, and The Onion is satirical, but so farcical that it's like, there's no way that people really believe this.
Right.
Is there? But you hit me up at the end of 2014, right? And said, hey, you know what, I'm looking over at the year in review and found some pretty interesting things. So I want to chat about some of that. But I also want to give people kind of a context of how it is that you kind of came about it, doing this.
Okay. Well, all started back when I served a mission.
Okay.
Missionaries, you know, of course, are big spreaders of Mormon myths.
Yeah.
And the story I've always told is, and this is, I tell it because it's true.
Yeah. You're like, this urban myth that I've always told. I mean, it's not really how it came about.
I had a companion that, you know, we're walking around one day and talking about stuff, and he somehow came up and started talking about how he knows that Sting sang Book of Mormon stories. Mm-hmm. You know, Sting, like the police, Sting, mm-hmm. that Sting. And I kept telling him, there's no way that's true. Sting never sang Book of Mormon stories. He's like, no, I've heard it. I know he did it.
I swear.
Yeah, I swear. I know he did it. And so I went back to our apartment that night, and I said, I'm going to look this up. So I flipped, you know, I turned to my missionary journal and flipped to the back of it and wrote down, did Sting sing Book of Mormon stories? And so that just started me actually collecting Mormon myths for the rest of my mission. So every time some missionary said something, I said, I'm going to go look that up. And I'd go put it in the back of my journal. And I kind of came up with this idea, like, there should be like a, you know, reference book out there or something for Mormons to turn to try to, you know,
find out if this stuff is real.
Find out if it's true, or to at least, you know, make the other person shut up that's telling you these things. So eventually, you know, I got home, and it took me quite a while because, you know, life gets in the way.
Sure.
But eventually I changed the idea of having some sort of reference book into a website, right. And that's kind of what led me to eventually making the website.
And then the name, you said you were really grateful that it was still available, but how did you come up with the name?
I came up with the website idea first, and then I'm like, okay, well, it has to have a Mormon name, you know, something that's Mormon related, and since it's a fun website, I was trying to go for some sort of fun Mormon name, so I was, you know, shooting around the normal kind of stuff, some sort of, you know, greenjello.com or something that was somehow Mormon related, but I never really found anything I liked. And I remember I was driving home from work one day, and Austin and I thought, holy fetch, that would be the perfect name for this website. So I got home, as soon as I got home from work, got on the computer, went and checked to see if that domain was taken, and when it wasn't, I bought it right then. So
that's awesome. It's an interesting thing, because when you say green jello, it made me think of the same thing. When we had purchased, or when we were starting to do the cultural hall, it was sort of a similar process, when it's like, ah, man, the green jello with a side of carrots, okay. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, that's not really what it is. Well, what do we want to do? Well, it's and at that point Mormon stories already existed, and so it was like, okay, well, that's, you know, any sort of variation of that will just seem like I'm trying to take, you know, what's already been created, and mm-hmm. And when I went to go and actually purchase the cultural hall, it had already been purchased. So I had to track the guy down who owned it and say, come on, sell it to me. Mm-hmm. Holy fetch, please sell it to me. So finally we were able to get it. So I think what I'd like to do, you mentioned that you have like the top 10 countries that have visited Holy Fetch and then some of that. I want to go over that pretty quick, but where I want to spend the majority of the time is the top 10 pages or parts of holyfetch.com that people are finding themselves more, because I think those are the fascinating stories.
It definitely is.
So if there's anything in particular, like with the countries or states or cities or whatever, that you go, oh, well, this was peculiar to me, let's hit that and then let's get to the stories.
All right. Countries is not really, you know, there's nothing crazy about there. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, the United States is by far the biggest country. After that, it goes pretty much the way you'd think. You know, English-speaking countries first, Canada, United Kingdom, Australia are up there pretty high. A lot of South American ones. New Zealand is kind of odd, I think. It comes in at number 10 just because it probably doesn't have a huge population. But how about this? Let me just kind of quiz you on this one.
Okay.
Out of the top 10 states, obviously, number one is Utah.
Okay, I got this.
Do you want to try to do them all?
Do you have a pen? Like, you can mark them off as I get them. Ah, well, that's all right. You'll be able to check it. California's got to be on there.
Number
for
two.
Sure. You got your Idaho.
Number six.
Okay. Your Arizona.
Four.
So I'm still missing number three. Nevada.
10.
Okay. I wouldn't say Colorado. What other Intermountain West am I saying? Oh, I'll say Colorado.
Nine.
But I'm missing something. Washington?
Eight.
Okay. Oregon.
Oregon's three.
Oregon is three, yeah. So that surprises me. So I'm still missing probably some random East Coast city, or like Texas.
Texas is five.
Nice.
Okay, there's one that's east of the Mississippi.
And that is?
Illinois.
Ah, okay. I wouldn't have guessed that one.
All right.
So state-wise, okay, it's mainly west. I would suppose that to be true.
I have the top 10 cities in Utah, which are pretty much the top 10 cities in Utah. So nothing too
biggest
surprising
cities.
There. Yeah. Salt Lake City's number one, you know, and then you go through the Provo, Orem, Bountiful, yeah. Those kind of things. So now I looked into search terms that brought people to the website.
Okay.
And by and far, wanting to know if a certain celebrity is Mormon.
Uh-huh.
Takes up the first 10 and probably the first 20
okay.
of them. So I've separated them into the top 10 celebrities that are searched for, and then also just the top 10 myths that are not really celebrity related.
So let's do it this way then. Let's do the celebrities now.
Okay.
And we'll take a break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the myths.
All right.
So I'm going to go that, let's see, 2014, Paul Walker has got to be one of those.
Paul Walker came in at number 9.
Okay.
Even bigger the year before, because he actually died.
Oh, it was in 2013 that he passed away?
It was at the end of 2013,
okay.
About like December.
So Paul Walker.
And I know that because he pretty much paid for my kid's Christmas 2 years ago, because I made a lot of money on the website.
Really? Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's surprising.
I could tell the day that happened. So I usually check, you know, every day just to see how many people are hitting the site. And one night I check and I'm like, and I hadn't heard about Paul Walker yet. And I checked, I'm like, holy cow, I've got a lot of visitors to the site today. So I started looking into it, and then within, you know, a minute or so, I'm like, oh, Paul Walker died in a car crash, that's why.
You're like, oh.
So yeah, for about a week or so, my traffic was high at the website.
Oh my gosh. I'm curious, and I'm completely fine if you don't want to share, but when you say a lot of traffic, would you tell numbers or?
Traffic?
I don't want to know money.
Yeah, it's not a lot of money either. So,
sure.
my kids
don't need big things for Christmas. I won't ask.
No,
first.
It's like about on an average day, it's 300-400 visitors a day, and uh-huh. So you know, times up by three or something
nice.
To get like a high day.
So. Yeah, so you look at that and go, "Whoa, what happened?" Okay, so Paul Walker. Let's see. The obvious joke here is Steve Martin.
No, I mean, he's on my site, but he wasn't top 10.
Really?
Yep.
So maybe we've graduated.
I almost think that one, yeah, it's almost like it's too old that people just don't even believe it.
I don't know. Let's go, since I already got 9, let's go from 10 down to 1. Is that how you've organized them? The one that's most searched?
So number 10
okay.
is Loren Scott.
Who is, I don't know.
Loren Scott was married to Mick Jagger.
Oh,
and committed
okay.
suicide, and that's why she was high last year, is because of the death.
Okay.
She grew up in Roy, grew up in a Mormon family.
That's right.
Wasn't, you know, all of these people, like, I never say, if I say true when I say yes, they are Mormon, that means they were born into a Mormon home, most likely were baptized. I'm not even positive on that, but mm-hmm. almost every celebrity ends up being not active or don't claiming to be LDS. That's just kind of the way things go here.
Okay, so Loren Scott, number 10, then number 9, Paul Walker.
Yep. Number 8 is Bryce Harper.
Okay, baseball player. Mm-hmm. And
he actually is Mormon and...
Hardcore about it.
Yeah, like I would still consider active. Got married in the temple, I believe, this year.
I think he was engaged, and I think that he broke it off.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So I'm not a big baseball guy.
I'm not either. I just remember because I made the offhand comment that he was like, oh, it's a clown wedding, bro, because he's the guy who said... someone was asking him, what are you going to go drink or, you know, how are you going to party or whatever? And he's like, that's a clown question, bro. So that's Bryce Harper.
Okay, so number 7 is Ryan Gosling.
Who is?
Who is born into a Mormon family. I'm not positive if he was ever baptized or not. I think he probably was, but I don't think he's super active.
I don't think he goes to church anymore. But have you seen, and I wish that I knew the age, and I'll try... if you'll remind me, I'll make sure that we post that with this episode. There is a video of Ryan Gosling and his sister at a Ward talent show doing some sort of... I'll have to see if I can even look it up. I'll show it to you on my phone, and then I'll make sure and put it with this episode. But it's so obviously a...
Roadshow.
Like a roadshow or like it, you know, it's a show that's being done on the back of the cultural hall up on the stage because it's got the terrible lighting and he's wearing like hammer pants or something just stupid, ridiculous. And he's dancing with his sister and it's like 80s fantastic, like from top to bottom. And it goes on for like 3-4 minutes. And I wish I could remember what it was. It's like Can't Touch This or CNC Music Factory or something like that. But it's just so awesome from beginning to end. And you look at it and you're like, that's just little Ryan Gosling. Not a change at all. So that's number 6?
Number 7, Ryan Gosling. Seven. Number 6, this one kind of surprises me, but Gladys Knight.
Okay.
People are searching to see if she is what she is.
And convert to the church.
Convert to the church, right. But still active, still...
She's still, as I understand it, working on the pips. So far, just her converted. that's a dumb joke I like to make. And I think she performs down in Vegas, right? I want to say that she's got a show down in Vegas that she does. And also does Firesides and has a redone CD of... like hymns church that she considers songs. for praise for that's, the church. So yeah, kind of cool. So Gladys Knight is 6.
Number 5, Ray Combs. Do you know who that is? Ray Combs was the host of The Family Feud.
Okay,
the many,
yeah.
But he was host of The Family Feud, was LDS, ended up making some bad business decisions and was bankrupt and ended up committing suicide. Kind of a sad story, but apparently there's still interest out there in him because... He comes in at number 5.
Okay.
Number 4 is Amy Adams.
Yeah.
Who grew up Mormon.
And who, from what I understand, was it Variety or something fairly recently where she talks about how she still values it a lot, as a really appreciative for the values that it gave her growing up and I can't remember because I always get confused between what she said and then what's her name? Blonde that lives in Camas here in Utah.
Number 3, Katherine Heigl.
Katherine Heigl. Between what her and Katherine Heigl said, because one of them has said, you know what, I probably will return to it one day, but for the time being, it's not me. And I can't remember if that was Amy Adams or Katherine Heigl.
Yeah, I think both have given at least positive interviews about growing up LDS and how they thought they were, you know, good values to be brought up in and stuff.
Yeah. So did I just spoil?
Spoiled number 3, but that's fine.
Katherine Heigl.
And number 2, this isn't a specific person, but a lot of people are searching whether the South Park creators LDS or either grew up LDS or born LDS, which, no.
But you do know sort of the story behind it as to why they always talk about Mormon stuff? Because that's sort of a... This is worth putting on HolyFetch.com if if it isn't there already. So as I understand it, though, and again, this is like the missionary that's like, well, I swear that Sting
I'll be writing this at the back of my journal later today. Right?
Yeah. One of them dated a Mormon girl, and then because of the religious differences, it didn't end up working out. And I don't think it was a spiteful thing, but there were, you know, that enough of religious difference that the relationship didn't work out. And that, whether it was Trey Parker or Matt Stone, I don't remember, but really loved the family of the girlfriend. And so just not became obsessed with it, but, you know, really loved it, wanted to learn more about it. And then that's kind of what's spawned this whole, you know, there are South Park episodes about the Mormons and the Book of Mormon musical and everything like that. So
that sounds familiar. Like, it might even be on the side. I'll have to check on that
one. Yeah, holy fetch. Check it out. And then number one, we'll drum roll it, then we'll take a break, and we'll come back and talk about the top 10 myths. Here we go.
Very similar. It's a group of people, and it is, and this is by far the number one thing searched for the site, is Imagine Dragons.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine Dragons Mormon.
Two of the four.
Two of the four, right. Yep.
Dan Reynolds, super Mormon.
Right.
His wife converted to the church, and his wife is a lead singer of a band, too. Not a lot of people know that, but the name of her band is Nico Vega, and actually, before Imagine Dragons, listen to this. Write this down. Are you putting this at holyfetch.com? I'll dictate this. Before Imagine Dragons broke and had the success that they had, Nico Vega was actually coming up pretty big. And so Imagine Dragons, on a couple like small tours that they did of the West, they opened for this band, Nico Vega, which at the time, you know, they weren't even dating. Dan and Asia is her name. Weren't even dating. And then he saw her perform on stage and was like, oh, my gosh, this amazingly beautiful girl. And then they start dating, and he's like, you know what? It's really, my religion is really important to me, and she converted.
That's something I didn't know.
So. Yeah, so pretty cool. Yep. And then the long-haired guy is the other guy in the band.
Yeah, Dwayne Sermon.
Yeah. Is also. And then the other two guys know quite a bit about it. But
of course, they started in, you know, Utah County and stuff. So
yeah. So we'll come back in the third block here, and we will talk about all of the myths that people are searching at holyfetch.com. I think it's fascinating. Check it out, holyfetch.com. We'll be back in just a second.
Hi, this is Dan, the Laptop Man from PC Laptops in Salt Lake City, where all of our computers have been hand-built in Utah for over 21 years. I've got the most amazing deal on the planet for you. The PC Laptops S1 desktop computer. It's a PC Laptops desktop computer covered forever for $799. It has a blazing fast processor, so it's perfect for home, business, or school. A computer is only as good as its warranty. So how long is its warranty? 1 year? 10 years? Hang on. It's lifetime parts and labor. So everything is covered forever. Viruses, hard drives, RAM, everything. How much does it cost? $799. It's only $799. That's right. $799 for a blazing computer that's warranted forever. You have nothing to lose. Quantities are highly limited, so run into any one of our 8 locations right now or call us at 1-877-596-SAVE or check us out at PCLaptops.com. At PCLaptops.com, we love you.
It's time for the third block of the Cultural Hall. Our good friend from HolyFetch.com, it's Casey Cummings, and things at home good?
Yeah.
Going well? How old is this kid that you're talking about?
Two kids, one that just turned 8.
Oh, did that happen? Did the baptism happen?
Yeah.
How was that?
It was good.
Yeah? Did you do it?
Yeah, I did it, and I served a mission in Austria, not known for its huge baptism rate.
Yeah.
So technically, that was the very first baptism I ever got to do, so
cool.
It was kind of neat.
Nerve-wracking?
If you're a tall person like me, make sure you bring your own white outfit. Don't trust that the church is going to have something in your size. That's my one lesson learned, but it worked out.
Yeah. Some of those pictures. That's one of my favorite things about it. Just a quirky thing about the church is you see some pictures of people on baptism days. And I don't know why, but also I'm grateful for it with the church that we don't spend hundreds of dollars to do these big elaborate like baptismal clothes and outfits and dresses and, you know, jumpsuits and all that stuff that we just kind of go with whatever the church has. But there are some pictures out there that are just hilarious where something doesn't fit or something, you know, something is way too small, or they didn't have anything small enough for the person because maybe the kid is way too small and they're just drowning in it. It's not the point. But there's some of those pictures where I just look at it and go, okay. So you have the 8-year-old and then...
One that's about to turn 6.
Nice. Cool. Good for you guys.
Yeah.
Did you get to have the conversation with, all right, now you're 100% clean, and if you make no other choices that are bad, and then like an hour later when they're yelling at you, you're like, great, you ruined it. Look what you did.
We had to do the whole teaching about... fast Sunday, because, uh-huh. You know, I never really forced the kids to fast or anything, because I'm not really the best at wanting to fast ever.
Sure.
So, you know, we just kind of say, like, by the way, now you have to fast. Well, you know, a week later, it's fast Sunday, and I'm all, like, getting up in the morning, not really wanting to, pulling out the cereal box, and it was the 8-year-old. It's like, I think it's fast Sunday today. And
yeah.
I'm like,
oh,
now I've got to be a good example.
No. And the 6-year-old's like, I'm not accountable. Too funny. All right, let's get into it. Now we're going to do the top 10 myths. And this, of course, not scientific research, but based on the website holyfetch.com. Holy Fetch, go waste some time.
And here, like, I just kind of had to look because there's a bunch of different search terms that can get you to pages.
Uh-huh.
So I'd kind of group things together, and then I also just looked at the top 10 landing pages for the website and just kind of came together with this list.
All right, so we'll go 10 to 1.
Right. Starting out with number 10. Did LDS missionaries, were they either on the plains on September 11th, or were they supposed to be in the World Trade Center on September 11th? Any sort of September 11th myth with missionaries.
Okay. So
the myth is there were supposed to be missionaries on the plane, and for some reason they either missed their flight or their... the MTC mission president told them not to get on the flight, something along that lines that kept them off planes on September 11th, which is not true. It was not even a normal flying day for missionaries that day. You know, they tend to go out on certain days, and that was not a day for missionaries to be on planes. So nothing true there. Another myth is that there's supposed to be some sort of mission conference held for like the New York missionaries in the World Trade Center. And my favorite part of this one is like every single person's alarm clock didn't go off, or they missed their bus, or some sort of like unnatural event kept them from making it to the World Trade Center in time. What? Also not true. Missionaries never met at the World Trade Center. They never did in the past. That was never something that...
Well, because
happened.
Clearly God would favor only the Mormon people and everyone else. It's like, right. No, here, your alarm clocks can go off. Go ahead.
You know, and I haven't looked into this, but I'm willing to bet that there were LDS people... that died on September 11th.
You know,
I mean,
that
obviously.
Would be,
so it's like, why did he save missionaries and not other members? And so
that would be interesting to find out, though. I would be curious to know how many of the 3,000 plus people that died in the World Trade Center, if any of them were LDS.
Right.
Holyfetch.com. Number 9.
Number 9. Anything that had to do with Battlestar Galactica and the being related to Mormonism.
Okay, so why is that?
The creator of Battlestar Galactica, the original version, was Glenn A. Larson, and he was LDS.
Yeah, that sounds pretty Mormon name to me. Yeah, Glenn A. Larson of the Second Quorum of the Battlestar 70.
He was LDS, and there's actually a lot of Mormon terms in Battlestar Galactica if you look into it. The like planet breaks out into 12 quorums, and they even call them quorums.
Oh, really?
The planet that they're trying to get to is called Kobol.
Instead of Kolob.
Exactly. But he actually died this year, so that's another reason why the search for his name probably went up even higher this year.
Do you watch that show? Do you watch Battlestar?
I watched the newer version.
And?
It was good. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, okay.
The newer version, I think, has very... it's not created by a Mormon, but they do still use the words like Kobol and stuff. So
and even within themes, and I guess when you start talking about themes, that could be you could relate it to anything in the human race. But I've heard people say that even like themes of episodes or whole story arcs are very religious.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of them that you can, if you're looking at it with that mindset, then
with Mormon goggles,
right? Yeah, Mormon goggles, then you see it.
Number 8.
Number 8. The Salt Lake Temple had elevator shafts built into it that at the time when they're building the Salt Lake Temple, they had no idea why there are these big hollow shafts being built in the temple.
Now, see, and I've heard that as well, and I thought, I think that it's true. Is it true?
It is not true.
No!
No. First off, there's many things, and this one is, when I was talking about how some of them are not well-cited, this one is very well-cited. There was some big BYU history professor that wrote a big...
Who's like, I'm tired
this.
Of hearing this.
Yeah. First off, elevators go back to like, I think it was like in the late 1700s, there was an elevator in some building in Paris. And so elevators have been around. The original plans for the LDS, the Salt Lake Temple, did not have elevator shafts in it. But by, let me see, 1887, mm-hmm. they actually changed the plans to include elevator shafts.
So that was before it was opened and dedicated.
Right. So before it was even finished, they had already... built in shafts, knowing that it would be an elevator in there someday. The myth also sometimes refers to hollow spaces between the walls that electrical wires would eventually run through. Uh-huh. Once again, those were put in there on purpose, knowing that electricity was probably going to be something that was coming soon. So when you say that was like inspired, no, they were just smart architects that were building a temple that could handle technology.
Listen really closely. You're letting the air out of a lot of people's faith on this particular story, because I've heard that, and I thought it was true.
Yeah, no.
But that's what Holy Fetch is all about.
It is. Okay, number seven. This is also one of my favorites. The puppet, or whatever you want to call it, Yoda, when they designed him, they were modeling it after Spencer W. Kimball. That's the myth.
And?
Not true.
At all?
No. There's can be found no link between the creators of Yoda and wanting to model it after Spencer W. Kimball.
But the no one has
ever come out and said, yes, we, you know, modeled it after him. No,
but the similarities are...
Once again, maybe if with your Mormon goggles on and you're looking for it, you can see them. There are some similarities, but it's a coincidence.
Because he always used to say, tell you I will. And then he would start his talk at General Conference. No, that surprises me that that's still just as much, because how long has Spencer W. Kimball been deceased for? At least, what, 80, I want to say, because he was right before President Benson, so that's 84, 85, and yet still number seven?
Number seven.
Yeah, number seven on an urban myth for LDS church thing. That's crazy.
Okay, number six is anything that has to do with Felix Meinhardt. Any idea who Felix Meinhardt is?
No, tell me who that is.
Felix Meinhardt was a translator, and he actually did translate the Book of Mormon from English into Afrikaans.
Okay.
And that part of the story is true. The story that gets circulated a lot of times is that when he was translating the Book of Mormon, he was like either inspired or for some reason decided that he had to translate it into Egyptian first. And after translating it into Egyptian, he was convinced that that the book was originally written in Egyptian, and somehow it ended, you know, it caused him to convert. He was not LDS at the time that he was asked to translate the Book of Mormon. But because of this, he was like convinced that there's no way that the Book of Mormon was not written by ancient prophets, you know. So it caused him to convert, and that's the story that gets circulated.
So what's the truth of it?
It's a blend of truth. So on the side, I actually put it as being unlikely. Felix Meinhardt has never come out in any sort of interview and mentioned this story. Someone that worked with him mentioned it 40 years after the fact that it happened. So it's kind of a hearsay story. But what's interesting is Felix Meinhardt did give an interview not long after he translated the Book of Mormon. He talked about how it was a hard task for him to do and how sometimes he would... his mind would be like, you know, he said it would be like cloudy, and the only way that he could clear his mind was to get down on his knees and pray. That part of the story is true, but he never mentioned about actually translating it from English into Egyptian, then back into Afrikaans. That kind of the part of the story is where it's just a secondhand 40-year-old story.
Is he still alive?
I don't think Felix Meinhardt's alive, but I'm not positive.
Give me the, how do you spell the last name? Let's figure this out.
Meinhardt.
Okay. Let me just look this up real quick. We're doing it, because if he's still alive, I'd love to just ask him and be like, hey, where does this... Oh, nope. Unlikely is where we're going to have to leave it. He passed away in 2007. Okay. Number five.
This is a fun one. There was some, and this is kind of one of those myths where it's a world myth, and we're just we're looking at it through our Mormon goggles.
Oh, nice! I love these.
Okay, there was a mystery man at the signing of the Declaration of Independence. The story goes that, you know, the founding fathers all got together to sign the Declaration of Independence. They're not sure whether they should sign it or not. This mystery man stands up in the crowd and gives just this amazing speech as to why they need to sign the Declaration of Independence. After his speech, just everyone's convinced, you know, it's just this huge moment where obviously everyone, you know, I just picture it that they're all standing and cheering and grabbing for pens and, right.
Give me the quill.
So they hurry and, you know, they sign the Declaration of Independence, look around, mystery man's gone. Now, that's an actual myth out there. In fact, even Ronald Reagan once told this myth.
Really?
When he said it, he actually said, I've never looked into this. This could just be a myth, but, and he went on to tell this story.
But let me spread this anyway.
So it's a real, like, you know, it's a real urban legend that's out there. But of course, if you look at it with your Mormon goggles, it's either one of the three Nephites or John the Revelator or someone out there that is the mystery man.
So what's the truth of it?
Even the original urban myth is most likely false. In fact, the big, you know, like the back of the, what, $2 bill where they have that picture of the signing of the Declaration of Independence or the painting of it, that event actually never occurred. You know, people lived far away from each other at that time. So the Declaration of Independence actually went from like town to town and slowly got signed
by
all these different people.
Just came in on the Pony Express.
So there was no big meeting where they were all debating about whether to sign it or not. It was just kind of... So the fact that some mystery man stood up and convinced everyone is probably highly unlikely.
So is there anything that leads it to be something that someone can believe, or is it just all hearsay in a story?
I would say it's all hearsay.
Oh, come on. I want at least something so that I can continue to perpetuate that myth. All right. So that's number five.
Number four. An oldie but a goodie. It's never going to go away. LDS missionaries have been called to China. This is a good one. And in fact, Elder Nelson gave a talk in the MTC on Christmas Day in 2012.
Okay.
And he addressed this myth in particular, saying, it is not true. Stop it. Stop spreading this rumor. Missionaries, you need to stop. He was pretty direct about it. He said, you know, the LDS Church never takes back doors into countries. If they're trying to get into a country, you're going to hear about it first. It's not going to be in some mysterious mission call that you open up one day and see that you've been called to a 3-year mission to China or something crazy like that. So,
you want to know something super embarrassing? when I was waiting for my mission call, I totally thought that I would be called to do something like that. I was like, listen, I feel different. I feel like it's going to, you know what I mean? I don't know why. I don't know that anyone ever told me, hey, you know, this is a thing. But I guess I just wanted it to be like, oh, man, mine is going to be something where I'm going the first place to, you know, first person into this country or, you know, we're opening up this whole thing. And in fact, a really good friend of mine, someone who listens to the Cultural Hall, his name is Paul. He got that opportunity and he was one of the first missionaries into Armenia. The country of Armenia. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and he got called before me and I was like, see, it's happening. So you did. So now I am. And then I got called to Ohio and I was like, well, it's not China, but okay. It's different.
My favorite part is when people say that they get the mission call and it just has this mysterious phone number that you have to call. It doesn't even tell you anything. It just says you need to call this. And then it's like a direct line to, you know, the first presidency or something.
We need to see you. You know what I've wanted to do? And this just reminds me again, and so that people that listen to the Cultural Hall can be in on the joke. I want to do, you know, how everyone is videotaping their mission calls. You know, mom's got the camera and everyone's gathered around. There's the fireplace and the vinyl lettering, if it took place here in Utah, behind it. It's like, return with honor. And have it all be staged and have the missionary, you know, take the actual verbiage from mission calls and just perpetuate this myth just a little bit more. You've been called to please call this telephone number to receive your mission call, and then have everyone, you know, what does that mean? And then, you know, just stupid.
You could have the call be like on speaker and then like piece together like an actual, you know, the prophet or something talking. So it actually sounds like an impersonator.
Is Mission Calls any of the other ones? Because I also want to bring up another one.
No, that's it on Mission Calls.
The other one is, I love the urban myth, and it goes along with it being called to China, of the, and the mission call was blank because he passed away before he could open his mission call. You know what I'm saying? He died over the weekend and his mission call came on Monday. Or like, it's like he got called to the celestial kingdom or work on the other side. And it's like, no, it doesn't happen. That's not how this works. That's not real. It's a great story.
You know, and I believe that mission calls are inspired, but you're inspired to serve in a place that actually needs missionaries at that time. You know, I mean, you know,
right.
if there's eight missions that are losing missionaries, you're going to get called to one of those missions.
Right.
You might be inspired by, you know, the correct one that works for you, but at that point, you're going to go where you're actually needed more than, you know, some super divine.
Or some mission that doesn't exist.
Right.
I know we have these 20 openings, but I'm really feeling that doesn't happen.
No.
Unfortunately, it's a little bit more administrative than that.
I mean, think of how many, the logistics of it alone, when there's that many people and that many missions and trying to figure it all out.
Although I will say this, we mentioned this in Articles of News last week, I think that you'll start seeing... This is the gospel and urban myth, according to me. You'll start seeing full-time proselyting missions in the country of Vietnam relatively soon. They just talked about how relations with the United States and Vietnam are starting to improve.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see something like that happening. But it's because it's already been in the news that they've talked about relations between the church and the country of Vietnam are improving. It's not because it's like, and ta-da, we're going to Hanoi.
Yeah.
Number four.
That was number four.
Oh, that's number four.
Number three, this one's kind of interesting, but is the picture of Snoop Dogg reading the Book of Mormon true?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen this picture?
There's one of him on the plane holding a Book of Mormon.
Right.
And I know that was a photoshopped picture.
Yeah.
And that's probably 3, 4, 5 years ago that picture kind of circled around. But then there's a follow-up to this story from 2014.
What's the follow-up?
You don't know the follow-up to it?
What's the follow-up?
Holy fetch. Casey. So, as I understand it, Snoop Dogg, his son plays football for a high school team in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And there were sister missionaries at the game. And this picture, is real.
That one's real, yeah.
But the one of him reading the Book of Mormon on the plane is absolutely not real.
And that's probably, now that I think about it, because I do remember seeing that, because I was trying to figure out why this old myth of Snoop Dogg reading the Book of Mormon came out. But now that you mention that is why. Because people heard about that picture with the sisters.
It's funny the way that it was a myth first and then it became a reality.
Yeah. But if you see the picture of him reading the Book of Mormon, that was photoshopped and it was an April Fool's joke. I think it was like 2008 or something. Someone put it out there. They made it kind of look like a CNN story and sent that around. So a lot of people fell for it. But you're right. There was the picture at the football game.
Although we'd take him. I'd take Brother Dog.
It'd be interesting.
Yeah. Okay, I'll leave that alone. Yes, it would be interesting. But he'd be forgiven, right? Just like anybody else. Number
two.
Ooh,
number
here we go. We're getting to the big ones now.
Anything that has to do with an LDS temple film.
Okay.
Myth.
Like, okay, so one that I know for sure is there was one of the actors in the in one of the temple films ended up like leaving the church or coming out as homosexual, and they either changed his face or stopped using the video.
Right.
That one I know to be true.
Yeah. And technically that is true. The church has never come out and said why they stopped using that. And people do say, so it's one of the older versions of the temple film, not any of the new ones that came out. But an older version, the actor that played the Apostle John, viewers that were, you know, seeing the temple film started saying that he looked different, that it no longer looked like him. So it started being told that they had digitally either altered or replaced his face with someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that really happened or not is not even for sure. So the church has never come out and said, yes, we did that.
Yeah.
We're just going off of what people see and believe. And then the actor's name was Fred Hunting. Mm-hmm. And there is a Fred Hunting that was that listed his occupation as actor that was signed some sort of petition that was sent to the First Presidency over Proposition 8.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of maybe if you want to, you know, connect the dots there, you could say that was the exact same actor.
Mm-hmm.
So this one gets listed as undetermined.
Yeah.
So we really don't know what happened, but there does seem to be a lot of evidence to say that something strange did happen there.
Nice. And then here we go.
Number one, you want to try to take a guess at all?
I don't know that I could. I mean, once you say it, I'll go, yeah, duh, of course.
I'll give you a hint. It has to do with a huge urban legend, like worldwide urban legend. And we're putting our Mormon myth, our Mormon goggles.
Is this the like secret room in the bottom of the Vatican or something like that? Because I know that was a story that we talked about in the last couple of years, maybe last year, about like the baptismal font for the dead in the bottom of the Vatican or something like that.
That's on my site, but that's not it.
What is it?
What's the biggest urban legend out there?
I don't know. Help me.
Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
is
exactly.
Kane Bigfoot.
And that's still just people like crazy.
Yeah.
And?
On the website, I say it's your call.
Yeah.
First off, there's a lot of things. First off, you have to believe in Bigfoot. So if you don't believe in Bigfoot, Kane is not Bigfoot because there is no Bigfoot. So if you believe in Bigfoot, the story goes...
How do you know there's not a Bigfoot?
I'm not saying there isn't one. I'm a believer.
Have you not seen him?
I've seen those pictures. It looks kind of like him. The way the story goes is there was an early church apostle named David Patton, and he says that he was out riding his horse one day, kind of out in the middle of nowhere, and all of a sudden this tall, hairy beast came up to him, and he just had this, like, awful feeling, this apostle Patton did. And he had this, like, feeling come over him that he knew that this was Cain, mm-hmm. and that he'd been cursed, and that's why he looked like this. Now, never did he, of course, say that this person was Bigfoot, but now we've jumped to the conclusions that, oh, he saw this big hairy beast. Other people see this big hairy beast. That means Cain is Bigfoot. Now, David Patton actually never even told this story. I mean, the way that there's no record of him actually writing down this story in his own hand.
Mm-hmm.
He told the story to someone named Abraham Smoot, who, like, 40 years after the fact, wrote it down.
Mm.
So, once again, this is, like, there's a lot of jumps being made
here. It's like hearsay
here.
From hearsay to jump to conclusion to...
But it's so big that actually you can find that story in the book, The Miracle of Forgiveness. So,
jeez.
But if you want to believe in Bigfoot, then go ahead and believe that Cain is Bigfoot if you want to.
It's interesting also to note that one of the foremost, like, if you want to call them scientists or researchers about Bigfoot, is a Mormon guy out of Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
Teaches classes on it.
Get him on.
At the University of Idaho. Yeah, we'll get him. We'll get him to talk all about that. Go check it out. It's holyfetch.com. I wasn't able to find the episode that we did with you before, but if you just go to theculturalhall.com and then search Holy Fetch, you'll be able to see what... I'm going to look it up one last time while I've got you, and we're wrapping this out so people can find it. You can find the episode where we go in a little bit more depth on each of these and other subjects that are urban myths. Sorry, hang on. I'm trying to stall to be able to get this because I want you to be able to know what the number is. Nope, I don't have it. Just go to theculturalhall.com. You'll be able to check that out. We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, that if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row, say it with me, of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row. We